Golf Today.
Golf Today on a Wednesday. Damon Hack alongside Eamon Lynch, Golf Week magazine, about to feast our eyes on some very different looking golf courses. Our eyes are looking out to the west.
Yeah, certainly the Twin Warriors course out at New Mexico is a really fun course to play. And then, of course, later this week, we're going to see a new course out here in Utah for the PGA Tour event, built on lava rock. Mm. And that lava rock is penal.
Ooh, don't want to go in there?
You're going to hear a lot of grumbling from PGA Tour players, because if they're out there, that ball's gone.
Can't wait to see it. A lot of golf happening out west as we get a check on the PGA Tour, the inaugural Black Desert Championship. I mean, look at this. First official PGA Tour event to be played in the state of Utah in more than 60 years, since Tommy Jacobs won the 1963 Utah Open Invitational. Now, it's the third tournament in the eight-event FedEx Cup fall, with tournaments offering winners the same benefit as the regular season events, including that all-important two-year exemption on tour. Players are also competing to finish in the top 125 of the FedEx Cup standings in order to keep full status on the PGA Tour. A lot of excitement around this week's venue, Black Desert Resort. It is breathtaking, as you can see. With more, let's welcome in Amy Rogers on site. Hey, Amy.
Hey there, Damon. Well, the PGA Tour is back here in Utah for the first time in six decades and returning here in spectacular fashion. You don't have to look very far around this Black Desert Resort or the St. George area to see some incredible views. And this course was constructed on a lava field. The first nine just opened in November 2022, the second nine in May of last year. And here every step of the way has been golf course superintendent Ken Yates. He tells me he was the very first golf employee brought on board at this all-new property. And I had a chance to speak with Yates earlier today about the challenges of creating and maintaining a golf course on a lava field and how he and his team are preparing for the very first time to host a PGA Tour event.
Well, it's been a challenge with the summers here and with the bent grass turf, because it's the first bent grass turf. There's only two golf courses in the desert that have bent grass fairways. So the struggle was to keep it the quality we want, the mowing qualities and the consistency of cuts to keep it ready for the events, which we started about 6-8 weeks ago. And the temperatures started cooling off and the place just come alive here in the end of August, first September.
We were just talking a moment ago about how unique this venue is. Obviously, the views are spectacular. How would you describe the course here?
Well, I use the term special because of the lava rock, the views and all that. And it's the only golf course I've ever been on where all 19 holes could be on a postcard. So when someone asks you what's your favorite hole, it's like the whole golf course. Everything's so picturesque there.
What are the challenges of maintaining and establishing a golf course that's built on a lava field?
Well, being in the desert and the bent grass turf, you know, it's a cool season turf, which does rather well here in the desert because of low humidity, there's less chance of disease and things like that. But overall, it takes care of itself. It's the way it's designed. Tom Weisskopf did an excellent job. One of my first concerns when I got here was airflow on a few of the greens. Once I realized there's only 31 trees on the golf course and they're all offside of one hole, I have perfect airflow, sunshine, no shade. It was designed perfectly for the desert. And it was meant, if you look at the course out here, it was the way he designed it through the lava. We didn't have to cut anything out like a quarry course or something like that. It looked like it was meant to be here. For the lava's been out here for 35 million years, and it was ready for a golf course to be put right through the middle of it.
What will players have to do well to be successful on this golf course this weekend?
Well, they have to keep out of the lava, for one. Which we have wide fairways. We have 51 acres of fairways, which is obviously about 15 acres more than most golf courses. So it is forgiving. The greens are a little bit of a challenge. I'm not sure what the exact green speed will be for the whole tournament, but if it gets windy out and the greens are firm enough and speed enough, it could lead to some problems.
It won't be long before the Black Desert Resort hosts its next professional golf event. The LPGA Tour is headed here in April of 2025. And Yates tells me that they're planning to offer one of the biggest purses on the LPGA Tour, hoping to attract players not just with that huge prize money, but of course with this very unique venue. And it's one I had a chance to ask some of the PGA Tour players in the field here this week what their initial impressions are of this all new venue.
So far, I've enjoyed it. I played 18 yesterday and then got to another 9 on it today. And, yeah, it's a good golf course. There's definitely some tough driving holes. There's also some pretty tough green complexes. It played, you know, very different. I mean, this time of year, the temperature fluctuation, you know, around here, you know, goes from 60 degrees in the morning to almost 100 in the afternoon. So, you know, played very firm yesterday afternoon. The greens were kind of bouncy. And then, you know, this morning played much softer. It was a very different golf course. So, I think you'll see kind of some scoring changes throughout the day as kind of the temperatures change a little bit.
I just think you can't be too aggressive into the greens. The greens are really good and they roll true. There's no crazy like pull to a valley or anything like that. I think they roll really true. So you're going to hit a lot of fairways this week and you've got to stay patient as far as just hitting it to 10, 15, 20 feet, even with wedges and giving yourself a lot of looks. And with that being said, I think a lot of putts are going to be made if you give yourself all those looks.
Yeah, the ball's definitely going further. You know, I think we're using minimum 5%, probably extra. So that'll be the tricky challenge. I think by Thursday, most guys will have it pretty dialed in with all the technology that we have now. So that'll be the one part to get used to. But yeah, the golf ball goes far. So you just gotta figure it out.
I like the course very much. It's really cool. It's very different. And honestly, it's especially on the tee shots, it requires a lot of accuracy. Mm-hmm. Unlike the courses we play on the tour, sometimes you can bomb it and then see what's going on in the next tee shot. But this one, you definitely don't want to hit into the lava because that will be a two-shot penalty for sure. And a couple blind tee shots as well. So it will be a really cool course to see how we play it out.
This is it, guys. This is that black lava rock you keep hearing them talk about. You're going to want to keep it out of this, as Yates told us, if you want to be successful this weekend. It is scattered throughout this golf course, especially off the fairway. So keeping it in the fairway a premium and being able to navigate these greens that Yates tells me could get a little bit speedy here this weekend. He also tells me he thinks the winning score here could be between 20 and 24 under par, of course, if you keep it out of this stuff. Guys.
Thanks, Amy. One of the most aesthetically beautiful courses we're going to see this year on tour. And here's where you can watch the Black Desert Championship Thursday, 5 p.m. on Golf Channel. Friday, it's at 5:30, and then back to 5 p.m. on Golf Channel both Saturday and Sunday. Well, back on July 8th, Keegan Bradley was named the captain of the U.S. Ryder Cup team. He played in the Ryder Cup in 2012 and 2014, 4-3-0 record overall with a 3-1-0 mark in his debut back in 2012. And on the list of youngest captains in Ryder Cup history, the youngest of all time was Arnold Palmer. He was just 34 years old and he was a playing captain in 1963. And by some margin, Keegan Bradley is second on that list and also potentially has aspirations of being a playing captain.
I know you said it's a long ways away, but what would be the challenges of trying to play and captain if that were to happen next year?
Well, you know, just getting the pairings in after the session, managing, preparing to play with preparing the guys and preparing the getting the pairings ready. I think it would be a really difficult job, but I made a promise to myself that I am not going to worry about this until the time comes if I do. It's really difficult to make the American team every year, so you have to go out and really perform. Like I said, right now my focus is on being the captain, but I'm still a full-time player. I'm still playing in all the majors and all the big events next year, so I have a real shot at doing this. But for now, I'm focusing on my guys and getting them ready to go.
And time to head over to the CDW Intelligence Center and go beyond the scorecard using ShotLink statistics. A lot of talk about this potential of Keegan Bradley being a playing captain. What do the numbers tell you about his playing performance of late?
Well, there are a lot of numbers that any captain would actually like to see on anyone on their team. And Keegan has always been among the premier players from tee to green in this game. And if you look just even over the last five seasons at Keegan Bradley's ball striking numbers, what you see is a tremendous amount of consistency. Not necessarily outstanding in any particular category, either off the tee or on strokes gained approach, apart from that one season in 2021, but very, very consistent. Mm. The flip side is there's a potential weakness in Keegan's game, and it's been a strength and a weakness over the years, and that's when you look at Keegan's strokes gained putting. He was top 50 on tour the first 3 years he was out there. Between 2015 and 2021, his best was 128th. Five times he was worse than 170th. These are the last five seasons, clearly struggled. And then between 22 and 23, he really kind of reined it in a little bit and became one of the best putters on tour by 2023. This year, a little bit different. It's a little tricky. He's 120th on tour this year. Now, he did win at the BMW a few weeks ago, and it's a sign of just how good his ball striking is, Damon, that was a 48-man field.
Yes.
And he was 34th out of the 48 with the shortest club in the bag and still won the tournament. That's how good he is, tee to green. But if you're a captain, the ball striking's a huge plus that you want on your team, but you still have a little bit of doubt on those most recent putting numbers.
He's had to learn how to putt again. I still think he's a victim of the anchored putting ban. I think it stopped his momentum in his 20s when he was a major championship winner. That ban's been in effect since January 1st of 2016. In 2013, he was in the 40s in strokes gained putting. 2014, in the 40s in strokes gained putting. 2015, you have to start to putt in a different way. He fell into the hundreds where he stayed until 2022. He's told me once thousands of hours had been spent to learn how to putt one way, and then he had to spend thousands of hours to learn how to putt a different way.
It's tough. And this might all be a kind of a moot question in the end, because right now he's 26th in the Ryder Cup points. The top six in points will make it automatically. He has said he's not going to pick himself.
Right.
Unless the team demands it. Mm. And the closer we get to next year and Bethpage Black, the more apparent it's going to be how much of an uphill climb it's going to be for Keegan to get there. But he seems to be willing to put up with the distraction being asked for the next 8 or 9 or 10 or 12 months.
And as he said, a very, very difficult team to make. That was the CDW Intelligence Center. People who get it.
Well, we're going to catch up on the LPGA Tour next. The ladies are beginning a four-week swing through Asia with a lot on the line. Ron Sarah coming up with all we need to know.
Golf Central Update, brought to you by Callaway Golf.
We're back on Golf Today in the LPGA Tour's last event. Jasmine Suwanapura earned her third career tour victory in the Walmart Northwest Arkansas Championship. Now, the win came in dramatic fashion with an eagle on the second hole of a playoff to defeat Lucy Liu. You can see the emotion, the celebration right there. And the LPGA, nice to have them back. You see the final seven events of the season, including the CME Group Tour Championship right now. A nice swing through Asia, Shanghai, BMW Ladies, Maybank, Toto Japan Classic as well. For more on the LPGA Tour, let's welcome in Golf Channel contributor Ron Sarak. Great to have you with us on the show as always. Let's start with the LPGA season-long awards races. It looks like Nelly Korda poised to take home a lot of hardware. How do you assess where things stand?
Yeah, just an incredibly dominant season by Nelly this year. She's going to be Rolex Player of the Year. She's got the lead in the Vare Trophy. She's going to be top the CME Globe points list. She's leading in strokes gained. She's number one in the Rolex rankings. She already won the Rolex Honica Major Award. Just an overwhelmingly dominant year. Amazingly, she's never been Player of the Year. She's never won Vare Trophy. So she gets both of those. That's two more Hall of Fame points, and that would give her 18 of the 27 she needs to qualify for the LPGA Hall of Fame. And throw in the fact that she went 3-1-0 in the Solheim Cup, and it's just been an incredible, incredible season for her, top to bottom.
Remarkable year for Nelly Korda. How about Mau Saigo? She's in the field this week, and she has a strong lead for Rookie of the Year. What do you make of her game?
Yeah, you know, it's, again, one of those players who gets by keeping her golf ball out of trouble and making putts. You know, she doesn't beat herself. Incredibly steady. She has almost an 80-point lead over Jinhee Im for the Rookie of the Year. It looks like it's going to be hers. You know, interestingly enough, the only really, really tight race we have coming down the stretch now is for the Aeon Risk Reward Challenge, where Lilia Vu and Runin Ying are tied for first place. And they're only 0.01 points ahead of Gino Tinicul to win that award.
Ron, we see the Asia swing now from China, Korea, Malaysia, Japan. There's only three of the world's top 10 in the field this week, only nine of the 18 winners on tour this season. We tend to see that in the Asia swing early in the season as well, where a lot of people aren't inclined to travel that far before then beginning the meat of the season in the United States. Do you see any concerns or problems just with the cadence of the LPGA schedule when there's so much on the line at this time of the year? That's a pretty big commitment to swing through Asia for a month.
Now, here's the good news in all this, is that with a full Asia swing in both the spring and the fall, it does feel that finally COVID is behind us. You know, it's in the rearview mirror. We had that. We didn't have China for 3 years at COVID. So now we've got that full swing. Asia is a hugely important market for the LPGA. A lot of revenue comes out of there. A lot of exposure, a lot of talent comes out of there. But you're absolutely right. To go over to Asia for right now, four weeks to play four tournaments, if you're not going to play all of them, it's a long way to go for just a couple of events. If you are going to play all of them, it is a long time to be away from home. I think that they're always going to struggle a little bit to get all the top players over there. But as more and more top players are coming from Asia, those fields are just going to get stronger and stronger.
Speaking of talent coming up, the Epson Tour just awarded LPGA Tour cards to 15 players last weekend. It's a pretty talented class coming out. Who most grabs your attention, Ron?
Well, you know, what I love about the Epson Tour, you look at who we had in there. You go from 18-year-old Yahui Zhang of China to 36-year-old Danielle Iacobelli from the United States. Danielle has earned her LPGA card for the third time. She's been a pro for 15 years. So you have both ends of the spectrum here, an 18-year-old from China, a 36-year-old from the United States. But the player that I have my eye on is Ingrid Lindblad of Sweden. She's 24 years old, honed her game in the American College Golf at LSU. I was at the 2022 U.S. Women's Open at Pine Needles. She opened with a 65. She finished tied for 11th at one under par, this rookie scoring record for the U.S. Senior Women's Open or the U.S. Women's Open. And to show you how well the Swedish Golf Federation supports its players, they went out and they hired former LPGA star Sophie Gustafson to be her caddy in the U.S. Women's Open. She's got a lot of competitive experience under her belt and a lot of support back in her home.
Ron, we're in the midst of a season in which Nelly Korda has done incredible things, as you detailed a few moments ago. Lydia Ko, Olympic gold medalist, another major Hall of Fame. And yet I'm concerned about the momentum of the LPGA Tour going into 2025. Will it carry? Does it matter? How can the LPGA and the game of golf tell these stories better?
Well, you know, I think Eamon hit right on the point there that this 4 weeks out of the American media spotlight through the Asia swing does make it hard to get momentum going. But I do think that the success, the incredible year that Nelly had, is going to carry over into next year. I really love the fact that Lilia Vu followed up her really good 2023 with a strong 2024. We've seen so many players come along, seems like they had their breakthrough year and then didn't build on it. I think we're going to see more from Rose Zhang in the future. So I think there's every reason to be encouraging about it. The LPGA then does also have those same scheduling problems we're talking about at the beginning of the season. They start with a tournament to have some time off. Then they go over to Asia, and then they come back, and it doesn't really feel like it gets going until we get into mid-late March. And that'll be the problem. That's more of a PR problem for them. But the star power is there to captivate the fans, no question about that.
One way to captivate the fans when they get back in the continental U.S. is at the Annika event coming up next month. Caitlin Clark is part of the Pro-Am group there, Ron. It's very easy to dismiss celebrities and athletes playing in Pro-Ams. This one, that's not so easily dismissed in terms of the impact this could have, right?
You could argue that she's been the most talked about, most popular athlete in any sport over the last year. And I think anytime you get a star from another sport, Steph Curry's an example, you get a star from another sport playing golf, it's good for the game. It grows the game. You know, I once asked Darius Rucker, the musician, Hootie and the Blowfish, about why so many entertainers, so many celebrities love to play golf. And he made a point I hadn't thought of. He said, yeah, the competition's fun, the camaraderie's fun, but it's also 4 hours out of the spotlight. If you're a celebrity, you're on a golf course and people aren't going to bother you for 4 hours. That's not going to be the case for Caitlin when she's playing in a pro-am. But nothing but good news for golf to have an athlete of her caliber and of her notoriety playing golf.
Yeah, nice to have Caitlin Clark interested in golf. Nice to have the LPGA back, and nice to have Ron Sarek with us on this Wednesday. Thank you, pal.
Talk to you down the road, my friends.
All right, folks, when Golf Today rolls on, we're checking in on the Korn Ferry Tour, which had a Sunday to remember. 30 players punched their ticket to the PGA Tour, and Noah Goodwin was the last man standing in Indiana. Mr. Goodwin, number 30, joins us next. A heart-stopping Korn Ferry Tour season concluded Sunday afternoon at the Korn Ferry Tour Championship presented by United Leasing and Finance as 30 PGA Tour cards were awarded in a ceremony at the Pete Dye Course at French Lick. Top 30 players on the points list earned PGA Tour cards for 2025, which begins in January. So let's take a look at the 30 players who have received their PGA Tour cards. Some guys going back, some names you recognize, like Harry Higgs, you know, Frankie Sappin, Max McGreevy, William Mao. How about Quade Cummins, friend of the program, we can call him. What a move made by Braden Thornberry. Jackson Suber, who competed in the U.S. Open at Pinehurst, number two. There you see number 30, Noah Goodwin. After learning he would be the last man to receive a PGA Tour card, he became very emotional.
I always fight. Until the last putt drops every single round, I got nothing better to do out there except just give it my all. And I knew I've put in the work. I knew my game was there. And I made this insane putt on 8 for par, like a 20-footer downhill. And at that point, I just kind of knew, like, it's now or never at this point. And just keep fighting. I really don't have much else to say right now. I just fought the entire time.
Well, you made a great birdie on 9, and then you sat for about 2 hours waiting to see what Brian Cable would finish up on the last hole. What was that two-hour wait like?
Awful. Awful. Every second of it was awful. There was no break the entire time. God, at the end of the day, I got lucky. But it takes a lot of luck to play this game, and it takes a lot of luck to get where we're going. So I'm just grateful. I'm proud of the effort. I'm proud of the people I have around me that have been here for me and gotten me through all of this. Yeah, yeah, that's about it.
Well, you got your tour card on the number, that 30th spot. When you finally realized that moment, who was the first person you gave a hug to?
Oh, it had to have been my girlfriend. I don't even know. The last 30 minutes have been a blur. I think my girlfriend she used to play pro golf as well. She knows what this is like. She knows the struggle of it all. She knows how one putt can change your entire next year. And she supported me all the way. She's there for me whenever I need to rant and vent, and she's there whenever I have the good weeks and the bad, and she's just there for me. And then from there it was mom and dad who were there back whenever I was 7, and I told them I wanted to play this stupid game for a living, and I never looked back since, and 7-year-old me would be really proud right now.
And so great to have Noah Goodwin with us now. I want to go back inside that clubhouse. You're waiting to find out your fate. There's a camera in your face. You're wiping your brow. Folks are walking this way and that. What was going through your mind during that interminable wait?
Oh, man, just about every emotion I can think of. Looking back on the course of the entire year, thinking about that, thinking about the years leading up to this, everything that's gone into it. I mean, it was just all out of my hands at that point. So whenever it's all out of your hands, you just think on what you could have done in the past. And it was just a lot of anxiety, a lot of nerves, and a lot of stress, too much stress.
There's a lot of stress out on the golf course that day as well. Noah, when you made the turn, you were 4 over that day. Yeah, you played the back 9, 3 under, including a birdie on your last hole. Were you actually aware, hole by hole, shot by shot, what could be at stake with every time you swung a club?
I didn't know exactly where I stood out there. My caddy didn't want me checking the scoreboard until we got to the very last hole. And I think that probably helped me in some ways. I think if I had actually seen myself at a 4 over through 9 out there, it would have been a little bit rough. But I just tried to keep everything in perspective. I knew if I rallied on the back nine, that was all I could do at the end of the day. I didn't exactly go out in the front nine and put myself in the position to fly up the leaderboard. So from there, it was just about doing what I could and hold on for dear life, just give myself a chance.
Noah, you've called this a lifelong dream. You dreamed of this since you were 7 years of age. But at that time, you also faced some difficulties as a kid. You had pituitary dwarfism. You had to take human growth hormone injections as a child. When you reflect on those tough times, you know, what kind of toughness did that give you to be able to even try to tackle a professional golf career?
Well, I think whenever you're the smallest kid out of everybody, period, everybody, not many other sports you can play. And I just fell in love with the constant grind of golf, the striving for perfection, even though we're never going to achieve it. And being really, really small, I had nothing but my short game to rely on. And whenever other kids would just be hitting on the green in 2 and par 4s, I just hit driver 3 with short of the green and scrambled to get up and down. So from a really young age, I just learned how to grind it out there, just have grit to fight, take your chances whenever you get them, and just don't stop fighting till the last putt drops.
Well, now you've got a little time to catch your breath. No, it's about 3 months until the 2025 PGA Tour season kicks off again. What do you do between now and then in terms of working on your game or just remaining competitively sharp?
Yeah, I'm going to take about probably 2 weeks off. Since I lost Korn Ferry status last year, I had to go back to first stage of Q school, so didn't really get an off season. So been a long time coming, just trying to get the body back to where it needs to be. And then from there, it's just get back to work. I trust the process that's gotten me here to this day. I don't think I need to reinvent anything, but it's just about going to my team, going to my trainer, going to my coach, and just trying to find the little ways that we can split hairs and try to get that 1% better every day.
Is that the kind of discipline that you think is a valuable asset now? Because a lot of guys who are making the leap to the next level would automatically look to see where's the delta between them and the best in the world, where they need to work. It can't be that easy to suddenly just actually trust the game that got you there in the first place.
I mean, it's all I got, man. At the end of the day, it was the process that got me here. Just grinding it out is who I am. I don't want to change who I am as a golfer. Every single person out there has their own way that they play the game. And I just think now more than ever is the time to stick to my guns and stick with what I know and how I do things and just try to do it a little better.
No, I know you're very close to your parents. Your dad has been a caddy for you in the past. What do you lean on for your parents in terms of advice? And I know it must have been difficult to have your dad on the bag and then not have him on the bag. What was that process like?
Well, he'll be okay with me saying this, but we mutually fired each other after Nashville. he had caddied for me for the entire year, and it was awesome. It was a blast. We got to travel the country together, travel through South America together at the start of the year. And it was incredible. He helped me in so many ways, just as not only on the course, but just being a friend out there on the road whenever it gets lonely and hard and you're gone for 3-4 weeks at a time at that point. And it was definitely a little change the last 2 weeks, but I still had him out there with me, kind of helping wherever he could. He would be out there whenever my caddy and I were playing our practice rounds. So he was still involved in all the process and everything, just not carrying the clubs and listening to me rant whenever things go poorly out there this time.
Are you a goal setter, Noah, in the sense of, have you figured out what is your goal yet for the 2025 season on the PGA Tour?
I have things I would like to attain, yeah. I think me along with the other 30 guys, we had all won a win out there. Talked a little bit about, I get to achieve my dream now of playing on the PGA Tour, but whenever you're growing up and you're on the putting green those late nights, you're holing putts to win PGA Tour events, to keep you going. So, I would say a win's my goal. Then from there, just try to qualify from as many majors as I can. I want to try to showcase my game on the biggest stage in the world. And yeah, just those two mostly, and just see how far I can go.
Noah, in that interview on Sunday, you mentioned having a girlfriend who's competed professionally in the same sport. What kind of a rock has she been, just having someone by your side who understands, you know, that a missed putt can sometimes make dinner not taste very good?
Yeah, it means everything. I mean, you have a lot more bad days than good days at times in this game, and sometimes it's vice versa. I lost my card last year. I played pretty horrible for the entirety of it. And just those nights whenever you're frustrated and you're hitting your head against the brick wall, just having somebody who's been there and knows exactly the way that you're feeling, he'll listen to you vent and not always offer advice, but just offer that support that we need at the end of the day. At the end of the day, we're all going to wake up tomorrow and repeat the process, do the same thing over again. But sometimes it's just really nice to be heard and listened to and have somebody that knows exactly that pain that you can go through at times.
Well, Noah, the arrow is clearly pointing up for you, and I imagine there are a lot of people looking up to you and all you've accomplished. Congratulations, and thanks for joining us.
Thank you, sir. Thank you all for having me on today.
Well, the Ryder Cup is always ripe for a little friendly debate. And since we've been talking a lot about captains this week, who gets your vote as the best skipper of them all? We're going to see if Damon sticks with this UCLA Bruin loyalty and actually picks Corey Pavin. Coming up next.
Back on Golf Today. Yesterday in New York City, the PGA of America celebrated the Ryder Cup 1 year to go. U.S. Captain Keegan Bradley and European Captain Luke Donald met the media, and then they kind of tooled around New York City, enjoying the sights and previewing next year's competition. How about the last four Ryder Cups? There you see the results. Kind of been a home and home flavor. This is the Ryder Cup played in the United States. That exception, of course, 2012, when Europe made up that big four-point deficit to win 14.5 to 13.5 outside Chicago. So it's time now to nominate our Cincoro Greatest Moments. And today we're doing a special Ryder Cup Captains Edition. Who is the greatest Ryder Cup captain of all time?
Well, I'm going to be accused of sort of patriotic loyalty here by choosing Paul McGinley. And it's not patriotic loyalty because, as you know, the Irish feud with each other more than anyone else. But I think in terms of a captain who left absolutely zero to chance, this is the guy. And the perfect example of that was Victor Dubuisson, who really played well at the match play earlier that year, had played his way onto McGinley's team. He was known as a quirky personality, as a loner. Mm. And the way McGinley managed that was just inspired. He took over tee times on the European Tour in January of 2014. So every time Graham McDowell showed up to play an event in Europe, he was paired Thursday, Friday with Victor Dubuisson. GMAC thought that was a coincidence. It wasn't, because that was the partnership McGinley had in mind. And then they went out and beat Phil Mickelson and Keegan Bradley, and then beat Jimmy Walker and Ricky Fowler in Glen Eagles that year. And it actually went beyond that, because McGinley went and spent 3 days with Dubuisson to get to know him and his family. He found out that there were three friends in his circle who kind of kept him mentally evenly balanced.
Yeah.
McGinley had them credentialed, and they stayed in the Glen Eagles Hotel that week. So every possible thing that was going to be done for a guy who would not have ranked as among the most important or star-studded members of his team, but McGinley isolated what the problem potentially was, or a weak spot in terms of locker room dynamics, made sure it wasn't an issue. And I thought, you know, he was going up against Tom Watson, a guy with 8 majors as captain that year. Yeah. McGinley was proof that players rally around a leader more so than a resume.
Yeah, Paul McGinley was tactically brilliant, but he also, I think, pushed the right buttons from a soulful standpoint. That was the week where I heard the term, we'll be the rock in the storm. And that was kind of the rallying cry for that team. And as always, seemingly every 2 years, this incredible touchstone that Seve Ballesteros is as well. And I just love how he was able to do that, not just from a tactical standpoint. And I love the mentor-protege relationship that GMAC and Victor had that week and leading up to that week as they played together so often. But just also, sometimes it's just it's a great speech, or it's the sign you put in the locker room. It's what are we playing for? How do we all kind of collaborate and work together? I thought he really covered all bases very well that week.
Yeah, and even on the tunnel heading to the first tee, which they've started to do again. They saw the same thing in Rome last year. It was just images of Seve Ballesteros as these guys walked towards the first tee. But it's amazing how much that kind of intangible aspect of a captain comes to pass with that kind of romanticism. As well, who's your pick for? Clearly, you're not going to go with McGinley because you, I assume, have American loyalties.
I like Paul McGinley. I'm not going to go with the UCLA alum, Corey Pavin, as you said. Maybe before the break, I would do. I'm going to go with another soulful person, a Texas gentleman, Ben Crenshaw, 1999, down 10-6, wagging the finger. I'm a big believer in fate. I've got a good feeling about this. Boy, did he ever. And seeing the emotion of the team, seeing David Duval on that Sunday do things we'd never seen before, shirt tail out, Tom Lehman, Tiger Woods. You know, the Europeans kind of backloaded their talent that day. The Americans had them out front, front foot, as Paul McGinley might say, ready to go from jump. And it equaled, of course, the greatest comeback we've seen in the Ryder Cup.
I am a huge Ben Crenshaw fan, one of the nicest guys you'd meet. But just on those shirts alone, Ben can't get the award. That was a fashion atrocity.
That's a very good that point you make.
Every player who wore that shirt should have started two down in the singles. It was that offensive. Fantastic captain.
It's one of those things that's so bad, it's good, though. Because, like, you know, 20-some, 30-some years later, now you go on YouTube or you go on, you know, eBay, you want to buy that shirt. Just to say you have it. I mean, it was so unique. We'd never seen anything like it.
The DeLorean of golf attire.
It truly is. What a comeback. How about the staff? How'd the staff go? The staff
well, we asked the different staff direction. On the show here, and they actually leaned Europe as well. Not to my choice, though. They picked Jose Maria Olazabal, who made the other great comeback in Ryder Cup history from 10-6 down entering singles at Medina back in 2012. And there is merit to this pick. I mean, if anybody was going to channel Seve Ballesteros, it's his great partner from those Ryder Cup matches in the 80s and 90s. But we've talked a lot in the last couple of days how difficult it is to win a road game.
Yes.
And the only time Europe has managed in the last 20 years, or any team has managed to win a road game, was Jose Maria Olazabal.
Boy, I tell you what, the Americans missed a lot of putts down the stretch, and the Europeans made a mile full on that Sunday. Justin Rose beating Phil Mickelson. And let's not forget Saturday. We all remember the bug-eyed Ian Poulter. How about Luke Donald down the stretch, hitting it inside Tiger Woods on 17, that par 3 at Medina over water. One of the great shots and most underappreciated shots, I believe, in Ryder Cup history.
Well, isn't that always the rap, though, that the captain gets excessively blamed if his team doesn't actually play well at all and perhaps gets a little too much credit if the team does? Well, you really have to assess it by the strategic decisions the captain makes. And so many of the decisions that prove important are decisions, as in the case of McGinley, with what was done before they actually put a ball in the air.
Yeah.
The other end of that is looking at a guy who manages in the situation, in that crucible, like Ben Crenshaw.
I'll never forget Jose Maria Olazabal in tears walking down that 18th fairway, tears of joy.